First, I want to make clear what are how we deal with that shield. I am Swiss. I don't know so English to speak English so well. Hopefully, we'll understand. That's first. I apologize. Second, you are able to ask questions. Is it in the middle or afterwards? We'll see how that goes. You're able to ask questions. That's okay. So there are two limitations from my side and one limitation from your side regarding questions. The limitation from my side is that first, when you ask a question, I am allowed to say I have to think. Okay? Your status today is not so popular that someone wants to think when you ask something. So perhaps I have to think about that because I don't know. The second is that it could be I don't know the answer. That's also legitimate. I don't know the answer, so that's good. I don't know the answer. But the tenai from your side is that I'll try to answer the question the way I really think. And I will not so much take into account whether it is so nice to hear the answer. Okay? That's the tenai from your side. When you ask me questions, you go into a risk. I also go into a risk. Perhaps I don't know how to answer. But you also go into a risk that perhaps I'll give an answer which will not be so pleasant. That could be. Okay, in order that we should understand each other, I have nothing. I only want to try to answer really and to try to give a toeles, how do you call that? That you should have a benefit out of it. So I'll try to do my best. But those are that is the setup when there will be questions and answers. Okay? That's it. Now, the topic. Yes.
Is it prefer the window open?
Definitely, yeah. But
we're trying to experiment if it would be cooler with the closed
window. No, I think that's much better. Okay. So the topic is that the topic is how can we maintain spiritual growth? Okay, I don't know really what that means. But spiritual growth throughout the different stages in life. And of course, when we are young, and people are young and perhaps new to the whole endeavor of Judaism, or young at age, so spiritual growth when you are involved, so that's a thing that you very much invest in and you feel that you are growing. And then comes a time that you feel that it takes an effort, and there are other things which are on the table or on the plate which will interfere perhaps negatively with what we call spiritual growth. So I want to explore that question together. How can we guarantee, that's too much, but how can we strive or try to grow further on even when life gets into a routine, or when life has its own demands. When you are learning university, being in a secular place, so that's a big demand. You have to provide, go through the tests and go through all these things. You're in a secular place. And then spiritual growth is not so easy. Not so easy anymore. Okay? Or when you are older, and let's be honest, you're older and you want to get married, perhaps, and it really doesn't move so much forwards. And then when it comes a time you are fed up with the whole thing, you know. And then you have to grow spiritually, but you don't really know what for. So that is, those are the questions, okay? I put it very blunt. I know that normally people don't speak like this to you, but we want to address the problem where the problem lies, not where the problem is not, okay? But there is the problem. We have two things, that means life itself, demands performance, and performance is demanded in a setup which is connected also to secularity. That's dangerous. connected to a secular environment. And the other thing is that you are disappointed a little bit from what's going on within your life. See, though? That's it. Those are two things. Now, what does it mean, spiritual growth? What does that mean? What does it mean, spirituality? I know that spirituality, a lot of times people think spirituality means something undefined, fluffy, floating, uplifting. What does that mean? What does it mean you want spirituality? The point of spirituality is something which is very well defined. And we have to bear in mind that that is what we want. Yeah? I want to come first to a point that we are able to define. What does it mean, spirituality? So, first, we have to understand that we are living in a secular world, which this secular world functions very well. Okay? We have to bear that in mind. We are living in a secular world, which it's a good world to live in. When I would tell you the whole secular world is one big, dreklach, and nonsense, then I wouldn't address the problem. Okay? It's clear? It would be a little bit coward that you don't want really to address the problem, and then you just, with one thing of the hand, say it's all nothing. I have such people in Eretz Yisrael, for example, which tell me, you know, all these doctors, they are all sandlarim, you call that in Hebrew, these doctors. But then I do not really understand that when someone is sick, Chas v'Shalom, you are willing to take money from the community, $150,000, fly the patient to Boston, and you are not having any bad conscience. And together with that, you say, all of medicine is nonsense because only Torah. Sounds to me spooky. When medicine is nonsense, you don't pay $150,000. And when you pay $150,000, it looks to me that medicine is something, okay? I had a friend, which he was learning in yeshiva, and he wanted to become a lawyer. So he went to law school, and he was for sure that he will be the most brilliant student in law school because he was matzliach in Talmud. After he was already married, and after he comes home to his wife and children, and he was all broken. Why? Because he said, there are very intelligent people out there, even when they are not Jewish. Okay? See that? So, let's be honest. The world is a world. We are not dealing with sense in opposite to nonsense. That is nonsense. When you put the question like this, that's plain nonsense. That's not erlach. I don't know what to say erlach in English. I think that's not there. But that is not real. That's not erlach. Yeah? It's not. No, it's not. That's not the truth. The truth is that the world outside is definitely existing. And the world outside is a world which has content. There is something going on there. Okay? Now, what means spirituality? Spirituality means, the definition is, it's built on that. That's why I gave this introduction. First, we have to understand that I am not coming to diminish or wipe away the normal, the normalcy or the normal world. I don't do that. No. But spirituality means that I'm able to see the reality from another, deeper point of view. I'm able to see the reality in another context. I see that whole thing in another context. Whether I see emuner, whether I see hashkoche protis, the way when you know what that means, I don't know how to translate that. Never mind. But whenever I see other things going on in the world, in a bigger context, that it makes sense. There is a destiny. There's a destination here. Things are part of a bigger picture. When I see the world in that way, I have a spiritual dimension of the world. But it doesn't mean that the simple way of looking at the world is not true. That doesn't mean it. Okay? The simple way of the world is a good way. That's the way to look at the world. That's the way to live it. But it's simple. But when you are spiritual, you are seeing that the world has a deeper meaning or a deeper context or a deeper destiny. That's what means Kedusha. That's always the case. That is when you enter marriage, then the first thing you are saying under the chuppah is Ariat Mekudeshesli. That means Kedusha. Kedusha means that when two people are marrying, they don't marry for each other. That's the wrong concept. There is no bigger context there. The bigger context is that you want to build something which is way above your own individual reality. That is Kedusha. Kedusha, holiness. I don't, holiness is a crooked word. Yeah, spirituality, whatever you want, means that there is something going on within your life which is beyond your personal dimension. It's beyond that. It's way beyond that. That's called spirituality. So when we want to grow or to stay in a sense, in a spirituality sense, that we have to strive for that, that even though we are involved in that simple world, and we are definitely involved in that, because we are dealing with a profession, or we are learning a profession, or we're dealing with all different kind of things, but we are still open to that bigger context. Now, the openness to that bigger context in Judaism is not something which is only a feeling. This is something practical. This is a practicality. The bigger context is not only that you say, I feel the bigger context. No, that makes that certain things you are able to pursue, certain things you are not. Certain things you do, certain things you don't do. For example, let's see a very simple manifestation from a bigger context. Very simple one. I don't know whether you know what that means, food culture. Perhaps, I don't know what, over here in Los Angeles, they only study business. No, guilt, yeah? Okay, only business. But let's say humanity or cultured humanity was around this world at least 5,000 years, okay? Without dispute about the age of universe, it doesn't matter to me. But at least 5,000 years was cultured here. And what humankind always did throughout these 5,000 years, that was food. Everyone eats, okay? So the development of 5,000 years of human involvement in food, what did that produce? Yeah, that's a cultural thing. What is the context? What is that context of food which is there when you are human and you're eating? What do you do? Good. So what do you do? What mean? That you have French cuisine. That's right. French cuisine, that's a new thing. You need a microscope to see the food, because otherwise you lose it. And when we deal with a neglect patient, you know, there are people who say, can't see the left side, so he will not see the food. He will only see a half a plate and it's empty. You pay $50 for that thing, and you barely eat something, but that's called French cuisine. Very nice. when you go to another restaurant, you'll find Italian cuisine. Then you get a very small plate full with spaghetti and with meat, and then you eat that with a tomato sauce. That is called Italian cuisine. Very nice. It's a very well developed culture of food. Unbelievable. That is the product of 5,000 years of humanity dealing with a very simple thing, which makes sense. You need to eat. And food is a basic ingredient in your life. And now 5,000 years of human development brought us to this unbelievable summit that we are able to produce sushi, even in the Western civilization. Unbelievable. That's right. That's what we were. There we are. What is Jewish food culture? What's that? So you will say gefilte fish. That's not true. I will tell you what Jewish food culture is. Jewish food culture is that you are eating you see, it was dangerous. So Jewish food culture is that you eat a dry piece of bread, you have a little bit of salt, and you drink a cup of water. That's it. And now, after that, you bench. And when you begin benching, I don't know whether you have a NCSY bench over here or something like this, I say it by heart, but you say benching, then you begin to say, I say it in Hebrew, you say, Hashem feeds all of the world with in a pleasant way. I understand that the whole world has food and it's a pleasant way. Just imagine, pleasant means you have an orange. Just imagine the orange would grow without these pieces, and you would have to bite in that orange, and then everything would spill everywhere. Now it's in a pleasant way. You get your food in a pleasant way. It's just a little bit, and it's packaged. The orange has a package which you can smell and you can feel. There's no package industry in the world which is able to package food in that way, that you can smell it from the package and even feel whether it's good or not. And that's the way it's packaged for you, and you open it up, and it's really, according to the, you make a half out of it, but you eat it, it's pleasant. Who knows in Lech B'chob, also he gives food to everyone. I understand. I just had a piece of bread, and then I say, he not only gives food to me, he gives food to the whole world in a pleasant way. I understand that. Fine. You go further on. You gave us Israel. Yom Ha'atzmaut today? No. You have a normal work day. What does it mean? And we have a bris. Someone made a bris to his son now? It's a normal work day. What's happening? And you taught us Torah. It's Shavuos today. It's a normal work day. I just ate a piece of bread, dry. I drank a cup of water. And I speak about learning Torah. I speak about having a bris. I speak about getting Eretz Yisrael. What has that to do? You took us out of Egypt. It's not Pesach today. I ate chometz, you know. Why do you speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim? Makes no sense. We say that on the piece of bread. Okay? We are benching on the piece of bread. We are not benching on something else. On the piece of bread. And then we go further on. And it says, we after this, Binyan Yerushalayim, we say, Hashem should build Jerusalem and the temple. That's what we say afterwards. What happened? I ate a piece of bread. That's it, finished. This what it means, Jewish food culture. Because we look at a simple reality of a piece of bread with different eyes. A piece of bread by us is not calories, carbohydrates, proteins, no. It is Binyan Beis HaMikdash, it is Matan Torah, it is getting Eretz Yisrael, it is having a bris, it is all these things together. It's all part of this piece of bread. That's what we are. That's what is food culture by Jews. I'm very proud to be a Jew. You see, I'm very proud. I'm very proud that my culture is slightly different than this culture which evolved unbelievable in the time of leave it, it doesn't do anything. This one. Okay. Good. That's why the culture of the secular world is evolved 5,000 years to this unbelievable place that you just can have some taste buds more evoked than others, and that what is the food culture? That what means culture? No, that doesn't mean culture. That means shame. You know, I'm very much ashamed to be part of such a society, which or such a reality that the whole endeavor of this simple thing, which is called eating, it was standing still 5,000 years. So that you can't leave. That's enough. No. It got wet. No. Okay. You don't. Put it up there. That's okay. So that is that what you see. That what means spirituality. Spirituality means. But of course, the bread has a taste, and of course, that taste of the bread is important for me, and of course, the nutrition facts are important for me. But there is another way to look at it too. There is that way that you see, speaks about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it speaks about all these different kind of things. This simple endeavor from eating has an entirely other ingredient, which is not demanded from the bread itself. That is your culture. That what it is, spirituality. You look at that simple thing in a different way. We have to keep ourselves open to that. That, for example, that is food. Or all the different kind of things is we want to live in another context. We do not want to live in that simple context only. That what means spirituality. So we want to keep that thing up. So that's a big work. That is a big work. And in order to do that really, in a real way, in this world, which this world is an unbelievable pulling reality. It pulls us down. Because this great, I would say great, even very, very, very developed way the world speaks to me, that closes my mind in, that I am dealing with the details of the world. And when I deal with the details of the world, I get all caught up in that, and I lose a bigger perspective. So in order to have this bigger perspective, I need to be careful about two things. I need to be careful that I don't go too much into these details. I am not caught by that. I am able to stand, to step back. That's, for example, you do that by Shabbos, or you do that once in a while also in the middle of the week. But you step back and you are not involved in that detailed way the world works. Otherwise you lose this perspective. You can't keep it up. It's impossible. That's first. Yeah? And afterwards, I tell you a thing which I don't know whether I should tell you that. Okay, we'll see. But that when you go into the world and you go into the dealing with the world in a more and more particular way, you will be swallowed by that, and you lose the bigger picture. You lose the humanity picture. You lose it. You lose that. That's first. The second is not only the details. The second is that there are desires and temptations which swallow the person up. Swallowing up. Yeah? That is the difficulty in giving in to all these pleasures and temptations which are in the world. Today, that is everywhere. Everywhere you have this possibility. We are living in a time where the possibility to satisfy one's most crazy desires is there. You know? For example, I give you a crazy desire. I don't go to these things. I can't, because we'll see. But there are people which they are going to a roller coaster. You know? They are standing in line, and they are paying money for that. In order to experience that you fall down 5 flats, and in the end you don't fall down. That you pay money. I will not pay money for that. I will not do it when you pay me. I'm not crazy. I'm not insane to do that. I am able to live without that feeling. I don't need that feeling that you are falling down, bungee jumping, you know. That's, I can't do it, the couple will fall off, you know. But bungee jumping, you are jumping down head on, you know, and then, but you don't really reach the ground. But this is insane. That's something which is not needed by anyone. Now today you need that. I need it. But this needing of this upheaval of emotion, which is connected to the world, closes the mind to see another context. Because that context is very much emotionally consuming. And then you don't have a bigger... You can have a bigger context only when you are calm. The world is a calm place. The world is not a swallowing place. Yeah? But we are living very much in a world which wants to swallow us. That's what the world wants. And we are more and more involved in that. More and more. We go into that, and we willingly go into these things. That we want, that we should feel something, and we should feel all kind of awkward things, but it is important to us that we should have these feelings. Yeah? So those are the two things which we have to be careful. We shouldn't go too much into the details, too much being involved in the details of achievement and things like this. That is not the main point. Shabbos, you are getting out of that, or whatever you are going to get out of it. And the other one is, we have to be very careful that you don't go into endeavors which are evoking tremendous desires or keuches hanefesh, tremendous ones, which is very difficult afterwards to take yourself out of that. A lot of people are making these two mistakes. They are very much focused on their achievement, very much. And they don't see that they can hook out of that. And then they are caught by it and no bigger picture. I'll give you an example for that. It's a sad one. And you shouldn't be breakers with me, but that happened. And the other one is that you are caught by this upheaval, by this desire, by this strife for certain things which make no sense. Like bungee jumping or whatever it has to be. You have to taste that food. You know, you have to. I'm happy without it. It's a big part of your, when you want to educate, when you're in education and have children, you want to educate them. It's a big part of that, that you should not feel any pressure that your children or the children you educate, they have to be exposed to certain feelings, otherwise they won't be full human beings. The people today think like this, you know. You have to know, you have to experience that. No, you can live very nicely in a very simple way. I think I am a fine developed human being without bungee jumping and without roller coaster and without shrimps and without all these things. I'm fine. I don't need. I eat every single day the same thing, you know. Breakfast for me is always the same thing, and even lunch, same thing. Same thing. Ganz gut, bei Nächten gut, ein Tag gut. You know. So what? Don't you think? But for that, was home, you know. Why do you need that? You know. Then you open up the possibility of a inside world, And then the richness which you look from the outside world will be able to be covered by your spirituality. But when the outside world is so consuming and so interesting and so particularly important to you, then the inside world, why should you go for that? Why should you do that? Why should you pursue that? First, I give you the example. Perhaps I say beforehand, I can only speak about myself, not that I want to say something about myself, but I only know myself a little bit. So I always, for example, I'm always very much, it's very much interesting for me when I'm in Eretz Yisrael. So the people, the soldiers, when they finish army, after the army they go for a trip. They go to the Far East, or they go to the Amazonas, or they go to whatever they go. I don't understand that really, that people go there. I would also be happy to go to the Amazonas or the Far East, that's very interesting. But, you know, I have a Far East in here. I have an interesting place in here. When I explore myself and I think, how can I approach a certain endeavor? I have to do that. How can I approach my tefillah? How can I approach my benching? How can I approach my relationship at home with my wife? How can I approach that? I go and I try out and I find there's a snake there. It's like the Amazonas, you know. I have a snake inside. Very interesting. That will kill me. I escape from there. I go to another place. I try another way. And this other way works better. But afterwards, there's a tiger there. I have to escape from that too. It's a very interesting place inside. I don't have to go to the Amazonas to cook it of a tiger. Ich guck da. I look here. There is it. Inside. Very interesting world. But of course, when the outside world is so captivating and so interesting, so the inside world isn't there. I have no possibility to look in any other way at the world as than the world dictates me. That's what it is. I give you an example. Most probably you will afterwards hate me. That's legitimate, but that example happened. Okay. You remember, there was every single time you make this sad anniversary, there was a thing was called Manhattan Project. And they were in New Mexico next year in Albuquerque, in Los Alamos, they built the atom bomb. Okay? So whether that was good or not good, it's not my business. And I'm not Truman, I didn't give the order. It's not my business, and nothing is my business. But I only want to show you what happened there. So they built the atom bomb. They built it. Now they made a test and it worked in the desert there in New Mexico. And it worked. So they knew the strength of that thing. They knew it. They made the calculations. They knew exactly what's going on. They knew it. And now these people were sitting in Los Alamos, and they were good people. Okay, they were very good people. They were Bethe was there, Born was there, Feynman was there. They were physicists and mathematicians with good people. Not bad. They were good-minded people. They were good-hearted people. They were people which they wouldn't harm you never in their life. Yeah? Good people. And now they threw the atom bomb over Hiroshima, and it exploded, Yodua. Yeah? Now, these people, they knew what's going on because they made the calculation. They knew exactly what's going on. It was not like the pilot in the film, where the pilot drops the bomb and he doesn't know what's going on behind him. They knew. And now, when the knowledge came to Los Alamos that the bomb exploded over Hiroshima, what did they do? What did they do? They knew what's going on there. They made the calculations. They knew exactly what's going on. Yeah? And they made the calculations. And the bomb exploded over Hiroshima. What did they do? You know what did they do? They threw a party. They were drinking. They were singing. Do you want to be part of such a society? Are you proud of that? Are you? I am not. I don't want that. Loss of humanity. Because of involvement in the particularity of the world. I tried to build it, and it was successful. And the whole horizon of humanity is gone. Not there anymore. Nothing left. Not there. Erased. You are happy with that? I am not. When we, in the Torah, we have a din, that Beis Din, that never happened, that never in history happened, that this din that could happen, that the Beis Din gives out a death sentence. Yeah? When they give out such a thing for one person, these 70 people have to fast a whole day. Yeah? Because that's a terrible decision for one person. And these people, they made the calculations and they knew what's happening there. They knew. What did they do? They threw a party. When I saw that written, I cried. But I don't want to be part of that. I am not proud to be part of that. That's a loss of spirituality out of the force of involvement with the world. You see? The same thing when you say, in a miniature, the same thing when you say, I try to success in being a lawyer, or I try to being successful in being an accountant, and I work day and night, and I pass the exam. Ah! But on the way you lost your spirituality. You lost the bigger picture. You lost everything. You were very successful, but on the way you lost it. Same thing as them. Because this success, this being involved in the world, wipes away the picture, the bigger picture, wipes it away. You are all involved in that. Okay? So that's dangerous, you see. It's a very dangerous thing. You can't go only for that you are successful in your endeavor with the world. That is not right. You have to be very careful with that. Okay? So that's the first thing. I think that is very clear that you need, in order to keep up that bigger picture or that other way of looking at the world, that this should be for real, you need to make that this involvement in the world is not all over consuming. It's not all over consuming. Eh? It shouldn't. Eh? So that is the first. That's the first thing. Now the second point is that once in a while, out of your life course, which life course is once in a while not really going according to what you want. It's not most probably. It's not only once in a while not going according to what you want. It is always something. Somehow not exactly what you want, what your life presents in front of you. And you very much want, you feel it's legitimate, and you want really that you should succeed in what you really want. Is it whatever you want, you know, having a work, being able to work, or having a family, or whatever it is, and you see that things are taking more time or are more difficult than you thought. And that makes you disappointed with yourself, or disappointed with your life, and then you think your spirituality is very nice, but no. Okay, that's difficult. So that is the second part which we have to address. I think that's an important part. So I think how to address that, that goes this way. We have to get used to that our life is educating ourselves. Our life is not a possibility to pursue things. Our life is an educator. It educates us. That means I approach my life not that I want to get somewhere. My life speaks to me and educates me. Okay? So that is the basic ingredient of our belief. This is a psychological concept which makes sense. It's much more intelligent than you think. Your life is full of obstacles. You say, no, the obstacles educate you. You go through education. Now, the difference between the psychological concept we have or someone which I think the way you should believe is we believe that there is an educator there which educates me. It's not only my own psychological help that I try to think my life educates me, which makes things perhaps a little bit easier or more meaningful. No, there's an educator there which wants to educate me. But what means education? What means education? Now, what you are used, education or higher education, is I want to educate someone. I take a person which he has a skill. Let's say he's musical, or he is good in mathematics, or he's good in writing. I take that skill and I foster that skill. That's called education. When you go for higher education, that's what you do. You go for higher education, you try to be, when you are good in mathematics, you try to be a mathematician. When you are good in music, you want to be a musician. That's called education. But that is a dangerous thing, because you'll grow only in one side. You know, you grow like this. Very nice, but you'll be crippled. You have to grow like this. You have to grow as a whole. But when you only go for where you have a strength, then you will grow there enormously, but the other sides will be neglected. That happens a lot of times by people which are very much successful in a certain part of their activities, and they're unbelievable big people, but when you look on the other side, it's better not to look. You just look from this side, you know, not from the other side. Yeah? We all know that there are a lot of people which are very successful in the world, but personality-wise and other from other sides, they are not so successful or not so sympathetic to be with. Yeah? Okay? So education doesn't mean that. Education means that when there is an educator there, the educator wants you to grow where you don't want. That's the point. Because he wants you to grow where you have a weakness. And now a weakness means that you are hardened. I will give you an example afterwards. But you are hardened. That means you feel, this I can't change. I can't change that. That's impossible. I'm not able to do something with that, because this is needed. That's me. There you have to change. That's the point. Because there you will be hardened. You will be like non-flexible, and that's unacceptable. Okay. I'll give you two examples. One is from the more laughing side. And the other one is from the more sad side, but they are both were happening in my life. First, I give you the one to laugh. I laugh at myself. Look, you can't know that so much, but I don't like so much to go to a chuppah. I don't like that, because a chuppah is a little bit painful, because chuppah is a question that you are giving out kovet. You know what kovet means? They honor people to say a brocha. And this is once in a while a painful thing to see, that there are people which they are thinking perhaps they'll get the honor and they don't get. And then that's a painful thing to see. So I don't want that, because I'm also one of them. Because I always think, and then I don't get anything, then I will go very disappointed. So I don't go to a chuppah. But I had a friend. A Talmid, a friend, which he married, and he told me, "I want you to be by my chuppah. I want you to be by my chuppah. It's important for me. I want to give you a kovet." Okay, so I'm coming. So you ask specifically, I'm coming. So he came from a very well-known family in all different circles. His grandfather wrote a book about physics with a haskama from Einstein. And he was still alive by the chuppah, you know. When you have a haskama, you have a validation from Einstein on your book, that's not bad. You know? So that's what he had, his grandfather. And the father was a Rosh Yeshiva in Shalavim. And he himself learned in Hebron. And he was a very good bocher. And by this chuppah, there were all different kind of important people there. Much bigger than me. Much bigger. Okay? So I wait by the chuppah, and first the Rosh Hashiva made the chuppah, that's clear, and then perhaps I will read the ksuvah. That's over here a very big kovet in Israel, that's a less of a kovet, so perhaps I'll read the ksuvah. Someone else, okay. Then the first two brochas, no, there's someone else. Then the third brocha, no, there's someone else. Then the fourth brocha, someone else. Then the fifth brocha, someone else. And sixth broch is someone else. And then by the last broch, which that's the biggest kovet you can get, he called Reuven Leuchter. So, you believe me, that wasn't good for me. And that's not called to honor, because there are much bigger people than me standing there. I want you to jump at that horse and tell him, God, you're mashuke, you know? So I saying that bracha under the chuppah. I went down, I thought, ach. So what was the message? That was not convenient. Yeah? That was not convenient, believe me. That was not an uplifting feeling. That was very embarrassing. There was the Rav Addis, which has a long beard, and from the other side there was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He can learn 100 times more than me. And they were both standing there, and I say, the Brocha Rita, I am a young man, you know. So when you would say, what is the message? Then you would say, look, the message is, you see, getting honor is not always so nice. That's a very shallow message. The message is a different one. The message is like this. The message for me goes like this. You know, my selling tag is that, look, I don't need to come over as a person of this older generation with the uppermost importance. No, actually, that's not you. Okay. I could learn it, you know, and grow the beard. I can't grow the beard. It just don't cut it. It grows by itself, you know. I could grow the beard and train myself that I should stand in the right position and then do that. And that would go, I would be, no, I don't need that. I speak with you as a simple person. I have no need for that. I don't need to come over as someone which is a old rabbi on things like this. No need it. I am not so important. I am just speak with you with the hate of your eyes, you call that in Hebrew, I think. Same thing. I speak to you, that's it. Yeah? That's what I speak. That's my selling tag. That's what I am. You know what? You make a mistake. Because the people think you are important. Perhaps you have to be more important than you think. No, that will destroy my whole point. I will be gone. No, perhaps you have to work on that. I don't want, this is not what I am. You have to work on that. That's the message. The message is there where you don't want to work. You see, you don't want that. Okay, that's from the side, which I say, I can laugh together. I don't want them in, oh, it's always like this. I had a Talmud, how do you call it? A student of mine, and she came from a broken home. Definitely from a broken home. I think the home was even on the radio. It was a real bad thing. And he married also someone from a broken home, very good shidduch, you know. So he knew me. And he married, and he organized his life in a way that the life was very presentable. You know these people which everything is presentable? Oh, in Los Angeles you have that a lot. You know? Presentable, so every single piece of dust is on its place. You know, everything. You know? Presentable, everything. And they had a girl, and the girl was very much presentable. You know, the things in the hair and the shoes were fitting. They sort of. So Thursday night, one day, I get a phone call. He cried on the phone. He wants to speak with me together with his wife. They just had a baby, a Down syndrome, without warning. Okay, without warning. So I said, okay, I can't come tonight. I have to say my lectures tonight. I'll come tomorrow, Friday, after I finish with his Nel Elef. I take a cab. I come to the hospital. So I take a cab. I go to the Hadassah in Karem in Yerushalayim, and I go in there, and that is a couple one day after birth. I know I cry. I don't know what shall I do. You know, so I took all my chutzpah together. I tried, and I spoke to them, and I said, "No. So what do you want to say now?" They want to have a religious answer or a religious thing going on. So what do you say? You are punished. You are crazy. What do you say now? To say it's a big neshama, no one wants that, you know. What do you say now? So I looked at him and I said, you know what? This child will never be presentable. No, won't be presentable. It won't be the intelligent child. Until it's clean, it takes a long time. It won't be presentable. But you know what? This child will teach you and your wife a lesson. Because when you treat that child well, you will learn that life is not about presentation. Life is about simcha. Because these children, the Down syndrome children, when you treat them well, they are smiling. They are happy. They will teach you, this child will teach you, life is about happiness, not about presentation. That lesson, you see? So that was a point of education which he wouldn't want to hear. Because when I would tell him that in the middle of the year, and tell, you know, you have to seize that, it's not so important whether you are presentable or not. Then he would tell him, well, what's wrong with you? Why not? I'm fine. I'm good. That's the way I am. And I am well off with my life with that. Yeah? He wouldn't hear. He wouldn't want to hear that. He would have a major resistance to that message. But now, when that happened, I was able to tell him that this is a thing which goes against his point, you know? Okay. So I left him. He has my phone number. I don't have to call him again. He can call me. He didn't. I met him a year afterwards in the middle of Gula, in Yerushalayim. I met him, and as soon as he says, he says to me, Leuchte, how are you? So I tell him, Berle, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? What's going on? So I said, you can't imagine. By us, our whole home changed. My wife is happy. And the whole ambiance at home is a different one. And she is so happy. And it's a beacon of light, that whole thing, which came into our life through that girl. He changed his life where he didn't want to change without that. You see? He changed where he was just on the fringe to be hardened in a way that he would never change. Never. Never. But he got the message, because that is the educational message. The educational message of your life is there where you don't want to change. There is the educational message. And when I tell you that your life is educating you, that is exactly at that point where you feel that, no, there I can't change. I can't do that. I can't. That's me. That is my way of living. There you get educated. That's why it hurts. Yeah? There you get educated. It's always like this. Okay? So that is what life is presenting in front of us when things are not going according to what we want. And that opens up the same thing. That opens up the spiritual, when you want, spiritual reality. That it opens up the spiritual reality. That you say, aha, there is more to life than only success. There is more to life than only going through that life and everything should go according to what I plan. There's much more to that. Much more to my life than that. That is this second issue. The second issue, that when things are not going according to your plan, you have to understand that this is an opportunity to open yourself up there where without that you wouldn't open up. You would not do that. Yeah? Okay? So those are the two issues I wanted to speak tonight. This first one, the involvement in the world, which is fed from two things. The involvement in the world is fed from going into that success, into the particularity, and that will wipe away the bigger picture, even till you don't see humanity altogether, you don't see anything anymore. The second is these tremendous, exciting temptations which are fed to a big amount today, and they are available, and you can have them. That will create a closing of the mind from a bigger picture, because you feel so much of content and so much of enjoyment within that world, which is non-natural. A lot of times that's not natural, not the nature going like this. Those are the two things about involvement with the world. And the second thing is that when your life is presenting in front of you difficulties which you do not want, their education kicks in. And the education is happening exactly at that point where you don't want to change. Believe me, that works. It's a posuk in Iyov. I don't have Iyov doesn't have to have my askoma. It doesn't need my validation. But Iyov says what I told you about how life is educating you. And he says, when you get educated, things will change. 100%. That is what I see within my own life experience. I see that when people take this message and they work with it in the right way, things are changing. 100%. And that is opening up yourself to the spiritual dimension which you have within yourself. Those are the two things I wanted to say. I hope that is clear. That's it. Atka. Enough for today. Whenever you want to ask something, you can ask. And when you don't want, I can finish here. Okay? Yes. What do you mean? What do you mean? That's a weakness. What's the first sight?
Well, the success that they're in is bringing up things that they realize are taking them away from their spirituality.
Yes.
So it can be looked at as, oh, so there's a weakness here that they can't cope with it, or something like.
No. Well, no. And you have to understand. I didn't speak about weaknesses. I spoke about things which are hurtful, which go against what you want. Against what you want. So that then that is not there.
Expectations.
Yeah. The expectations are baffled or not, they are not there. It doesn't go the way you want. It goes against the grid. Then this education kicks in. That's where the education kicks in. Okay? I think that's good. Okay? That's calm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.